This is an interview for the Western Sydney Women's Oral History Project, From Farms to Freeways, Women's Memories of Western Sydney. This interview is taken with Patricia Parker on the 29th of August 1991.
My name is Patricia Hazel Parker, née Lawrence, and I live at 43 Phillips Street, Alexandria. I was born on the 19th of August 1937 at Paddington Women's Hospital, Sydney. I am divorced. I've lived in Blacktown for 33 years. Prior to that, I lived in the city, and now I've returned to living in the city. I am an Australian, and I have four children, three boys and a girl.
Pat, can you tell me a little about your family background? What did your father do?
He did a wide variety of things over the years, but mainly was a labourer. He started off and trained as a barber as a young man. His parents were quite wealthy and owned a number of pubs all around the southern parts of New South Wales and Victoria, but they then proceeded to drink the proceeds from all of them. So when they retired, they were not only penniless, but left an enormous amount of debt. Dad had been an apprentice barber and fully qualified, but actually didn't work at the trade for much longer. My mother was a tailoress and in fact was probably the major breadwinner of the family for most of the life that I remember.
And did you have any brothers or sisters?
Yes, I have an older brother. He's a lot older than me and left home by the time I came along. He's 15 or more years older and I haven't seen him for a number of years, so I'm virtually an only child.
And so, when you first lived in Blacktown, when would that have been, and roughly how old would you have been then?
I went there as a young married woman with three children. My third child had just been born and I was 21. I had four children under 6 years of age, so I've had them very young and very close together. And about the mid-1950s, perhaps 1956, 57, when I first went to Blacktown.
And what part of Blacktown did you live in?
We bought a house, we got a loan, my husband was in the Navy then, and we got a loan through the Building Society at the time, which was fairly unusual. There weren't a lot of building societies around then. And we'd paid cash from an insurance policy from a block of land that we had, and bought another block of land at Blacktown, and paid £300 for it.
How large was the block?
It was about 300 feet wide by 500 or 600 feet deep. It was an ordinary building block then, but it's quite a large block now. We invested in a building company with the little money we had and started to have the house built on it. And then the building company went bankrupt, so we lost everything on the day we were to move out of the Navy house. But it was very traumatic with all those little babies. So we went to the bank the next day and they financed a house. The house had been started and was about half completed. They financed the rest of the house for a two-bedroom place. Then my husband and I built the rest of it on into a four-bedroom house within the next 2 years. We just kept building.
And what sort of building materials? Was that in timber?
Yes, it was fibro, and we had it modified so that it was very open plan. And when it was two bedrooms, a lounge, dining room, kitchen, toilet and laundry out in the backyard, and the bathroom, of course, was in the house. And then we extended it to a back veranda, another bedroom, then we extended it again, put on another bedroom, brought the laundry in, and then finally, only in the last couple of years, they've put the toilet inside as well. And brought the laundry in, and then finally, only in the last couple of years, they've put the toilet in as well.
So you had a large garden as well? A
very large garden, grew a lot of our own veggies. There was no fences and there was not another house in sight. where we were was out on the edge of, it was Douglas Road, and it's on the edge of Doonside, and it was just market gardens for as far as the eye could see.
No curb and guttering or anything?
No, like that. Oh no, no road. There wasn't even a road, and it was just mud and no transport, so that you just, you either walked in, which is mainly what we did, because we didn't have a car, and I didn't drive anyway, but we either walked, or eventually what I used to do was hitchhike in to do the shopping and sit up on the back of a truck trade thing somewhere and then just get the shopping, and they'd eventually deliver unless it was wet weather, and then they wouldn't deliver because they couldn't get up the road because it was just mud. So it was an interesting time for transport and mobility of trying to get around. We eventually bought a little car, but my husband used to drive that in and out to the station to go to work. But I didn't drive, so it didn't matter.
And the bus service?
There wasn't any. The nearest one was about 5 miles away, and you just walked to that. I mean, one of my lovely stories, digressing, is that I'd gone into shop into Blacktown one day, into Woolworths, which was in the main street, and done all the shopping and gathered up, because you took the children everywhere, there was no alternative anyway, and got home and thought something's missing and realised that I'd left one of the children in town, so that it took me another 2 hours to go, even though it was only 5 miles away, to actually get back into town, because I've had to grab up all the kids again and plod off on foot to and hitch till I got in there. And as I walked into Woolworths, the PA was saying, and the little boy says his name's John and he's got on red trousers and a green shirt. Oh, that's mine. And then proceeded off back out home again. So I'd spent almost the entire day going in and out for the shopping on the two excursions. So that's what happened. But also we had open fire, so that I spent a lot of the day getting fuel too.
And what was your daily routine? Did you work, or?
I didn't in those early days of Blacktown. I had been working. We'd been living in Petersham, and someone came along and said, "Why don't you buy a block of land at Blacktown? They're £50." And we said, "Oh, you're joking. Who'd live out there?" And of course, once they got to £300, then we decided it looked good. But it was our only chance of actually getting a house, so, which is why a lot of people moved out there at that time. And then when the children, probably once they'd all started going to school, I worked. But while they were little, and I subsequently had another child there, and while they were little, I just cooked and washed and cleaned and chopped and sewed, and I used to knit for spare money and sell it in the local newspaper, advertise it in the local, and I used to sell baby layettes. So I knitted every available moment that I had. I did aprons at home for threepence a dozen that you could make, you know, it's like they sew buttons on cards these days. And I also always was very active in the school, PNC, and fundraising and those sort of things. So the day went in actually existing, mainly. And my mother was very ill at the time, and there was a lot of travelling in and out to Sydney until she eventually died.
And your husband worked close by?
He was in the Navy. He worked here at Garden Island, yes, at Balmoral, where we'd lived originally, in the Navy quarters at Balmoral. And then he left, when he finally got out of the Navy, he then joined a bus company as a bus driver in Parramatta. And so he used to drive buses for 12, 14, 16 hours a day. And then it was a good life. It was a very good life. It was clean and it was healthy, and the kids could run and do all sorts of ordinary things. You know, it was really nice. And we did a lot of bushwalking and canoeing and all of that sort of stuff. Up the mountains and at Windsor particularly.
Did the children have far to travel to school?
No, initially the two boys had to go, the only school was in the heart of Blacktown, that's still there, the Blacktown Public School, and they both went to kindergarten there because there was only 11 months between them, and so they both always went to the same school. And then eventually they built Walters Road Primary School,
And so they transferred to there, and Jenny and Danny went there. Then they built Mitchell High School, and Jim, John and Jenny went there. Then they built Evans High School, and Danny went there. But they're all in very close proximity to that area.
And how did they get to school?
Walk.
Is it a long walk?
No, I think it's only a bit 2 mile. You know, it's not far. Yeah, no, it wasn't ever a hassle. No, we always walked.
And what about getting back to the house for a bit? What sort of appliances did you have back in the 50s?
We saved up for the fridge. That was a really big event, getting the fridge. We'd started off with an ice box, but they didn't deliver ice out there to us, and so it was imperative. And especially the first month that we moved in, when Jenny was 4 months old or 3 months old, the heat waves were just absolutely unbelievable. It was over 105, 110 degrees every day for 6 days straight. And I used to just take their clothes off and sit them in the bath, not with any water, but just sit them in the bath to play, because it was the only cool spot in the house. And then each night we'd hose the house down, because it had just, you could hear it groaning and creaking, and it was just like an oven. But luckily you could open the doors and the windows, and the breeze at night had run, you know, come through. But it was very difficult after living in the city all my life to cope with that sort of heat with new families, and at that stage not having the fridge. And we very quickly got the fridge, and that was a real major event.
What was it, a silent night?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. And then later on it got to be a Kelvinator, and we just were stuck with that for years. But my husband was very good. We spent a lot of time, he spent a lot of time building on the house, cupboards and everything that we needed. Lots of books, so we're always constantly extending bookshelves and cupboards. Listened to the radio a lot. We were all pretty keen on the radio. And it was a big contact that I had. My biggest social contact was the baker and the mailman. And many years later, the mailman said to me, "I knew I always had to leave time when I came to your place," he said, "because you were just like blotting paper." He said, "Anything I had to say, you'd say, then what did you do, and then what did you do?" So it was very lonely, but I don't have a bad memory of that loneliness, just that it was very lonely.
Did you feel isolated?
Oh, very, very. And because my mother was ill, I felt really cut off.
Did you have much help with the children?
Well, my husband's very good, yeah. I mean, he was a superb husband and superb father, and would always, you know, washing and cleaning and all of that stuff. It was never mine, it was anybody's that needed to do it. But he went before they were up in the morning, and he didn't get back till after dark at night. So he used to leave in the dark and get back in the dark. You know, very little other than the weekends to do anything in.
So what about after school care and things like that?
No. You just did it yourself. I used to just walk them down in the morning and then go back down in the afternoon, pick them up again and walk them back home. But that was my social outing as well, because I'd see other parents that were there.
Did you have neighbours nearby?
No, not within sight. For the first, probably, I can't remember how long, but maybe 3 or 5 years, I'm not sure. But then neighbours came, and that made a big difference just for the social contact, because they all had small children. But also, when you have 4 children, if you get 4 visitors, you've got 8 children. You know, the place was always full of people and kids. Because my husband's from a very big family. He's the youngest of 12. And they all had married with children, so that there were always a lot of people around. But the big change for me came when I learned to drive, because that gave me freedom that I hadn't had before in almost every sphere. You know, just the shopping got to be something that was so easy to do.
And talking about the shops, what sort of shops were there in the 50s? Were there many?
In the main street, they were very bedraggled and very run down. The Chinese people had quite a lot of shops there. The Singh family had hardware shops. There was a very large picture theatre. And the School of Arts, which is a really ramshackle old building, was a main focal point. But it wasn't that long after I was there that they demolished them. The council demolished the whole street. And surprisingly, it's a very narrow street, built them all back up in the same narrow street, so that it constantly has been far too narrow as a main street. It's where the mall is now. But it used to be the only shops except up Campbell Street, which was the bank, another hardware shop, and some fabric shops. But then Woolworths came in the main street, and that was the department store where you did all the shopping.
Did you have to travel to Parramatta for shopping sometimes?
No, never. Mm. No, that would have been too hard. No, we did, when we went out in the car, we probably went to other places for shopping, but I don't have a memory of that. I think we got everything that we needed. We used to grow our own vegetables and make quite a lot of anything of ourselves, so we didn't buy a lot. And we were never big meat eaters, so it was never...
Did you make your own preserve?
Yes, and we had fruit trees, so that you always did your own fruit and bottling. And we bought from the markets in the city, and Jim would bring it out by car, by the box. We used to always buy boxes of fruit. But you could always go down to the market gardens and buy anything you wanted too, because they were all around us. So you got very cheap and very fresh vegetables easily.
And did you swap things with other neighbours?
Yes. Well, we used to barter quite a lot with people. It's interesting to see that coming back in again now, and I suppose unemployment does that. But in fact, I used to barter my knitting and my sewing, as well as the jams and pickles and things that you would swap with other people who did something or other else. And in fact, when I was telling to you about learning to drive, that was one of the ways that I paid for the driving lessons, was in bartering.
And what did you do for recreation and the family generally? What did you all do for recreation and in your leisure time?
Yeah. There was quite a lot involved around the school, because it was a focal point, the school and the workers' club at Blacktown. And it was probably, the workers' club was the life-saving grace of everybody around there that had children in those days, because they had a bus. And they'd come and pick the kids up and take them to soccer and then bring them home again afterwards, because it was quite a long way away. And Jenny used to go to dancing, and Jim used to go to judo, and John and Danny went to soccer and varying other things. Then they joined a chess club, and all of those things were associated with the workers' club. So the workers' club bus used to pick them up and take them everywhere initially. So that was enormous, you know, because people could just never have got their children to half the functions, which was good. But I had, my education was here at the Conservatorium High School in Sydney, and I have a music background. And so when I started to get a little bit of time and more mobility, what I was looking for was something with music involved in it. And the only thing out there then was a church choir on Sunnyholt Road at the Baptist Church, or the Methodist Church, I think it was at the time. And I joined that choir, and there were 100-odd people in the choir, which I found absolutely staggering, you know, that so many people were in the choir, and it's because there wasn't anything else there. So five of us got together and formed a players group, and we used to put plays on twice a year. And then, because it grew with far too many people for the amount of plays we could put on, we then formed another group of about 20 of us, formed a separate musical society. So there was Blacktown Players and then Blacktown Musical Society. And they functioned, we finished up, I mean, they went for 21 years, and they did three musicals a year, and the Players did five plays a year. And so that was my fair obsession for a lot of those years. And then eventually we formed an art and craft group, because everybody was doing macrame in their kitchen. And so we said, well, why don't we ask the council for somewhere central? And Pam Green said, why don't you use my place out on Doonside Road? And so we went out there, and that was the start of the art and craft group. But that was into the 60s by then, late 60s.
So the community network was a very strong one among women.
Extremely strong. There was a group called the Union of Australian Women, the UAW, that were out there then. And those women were in everything. And they had all of the things to do that had any sort of political or social change. Those women belonged to the UAW. And they used to sell, we used to go and pick strawberries out of the fields. and sell those on the roadside to get money to send somebody away to a conference. So if there was a conference on somewhere, we'd just go and pick more strawberries and sell them till we had enough money to pay the fare of whoever was to go. But it was a very tight, united, supportive community. And the women, who were all a lot older than I was, were really fantastic to me because they could see me getting lost in all of these children and did everything they possibly could to make life easier for me. And I think I told you, they insisted that I learn to swim because I couldn't swim, and they insisted that I learn to drive. And both of those things actually changed my life because of the freedom that they gave me. But their political influence was very great too.
So that was, even though you are isolated, you really had a very strong community which helped to survive.
Yes, we probably only saw each other once a month or once a fortnight if we were lucky. And then somebody would come and pick me up with the car. But yes, they were a very, very influential group of women in my life. And an important woman in the life of Blacktown.
Yeah. And what political affiliation was it?
Right. That was the Union of Australian Women was a mixed bunch. It comprised a lot of the left-wing women and also a lot of the church women at the time. They were a very mixed bunch. But my mother and father, and my husband's mother and father, were both card-carrying Communist Party members here in the city and executive of the Communist Party here in the city. So we'd both come from a very left-wing background and political background, so that it fitted in very well out there. And then eventually we did join the Communist Party in Blacktown, which was also very active at the time.
In the 50s.
Yes, very strong. And when Leila Park developed as the Housing Commission, they were the people, the area, they were the people who were doing all the politicking and advocating for conditions for the young ones that had been put out there in such isolation. And in ghetto, you know. But yeah, no, they were very influential. They were represented on council and on most of the committees to do with the workers' club and the sporting bodies, the cultural bodies. They were always very active people.
And how did the isolation change from isolation to organisation affect you as a woman?
I probably didn't notice a lot of difference because it was gradual and because the area we were in stayed rural for quite some time. It wasn't until many years later that the housing actually built up and the road went through and the bus service went through. That probably changed things quite considerably. But, I mean, the buses stopped at 6 o'clock at night, so that there was never any continuity of being able to get anywhere. But I think that that gradual change, the big change for me came with the Whitlam government. That was when I noticed the biggest change, because they'd sent out a man named Arthur Pike to do a study on cultural facilities out there, of which there were none, and they then did quite a lot of lobbying with the council to take on a community arts officer, because the community arts board had just been set up. And I was doing secretarial work. I'd gone to work for the Ten Pin Bowl, AMF, American Machine and Foundry, there at Blacktown initially. That was my first full-time job back again. I'd been a bookkeeper and an accountant, and I'd gone there as treasurer to look after the books, and I used to do that at night when my husband came home. Then I'd go to work and do their books. And then when they got up to date, I just continued on to do all sorts of secretarial work around the place and running the place. And then when the manager resigned, I took over as manager for a while, and mainly just did that sort of, I don't know, the day was full, it was gone. You know?
And so you were financially independent virtually. I was going to ask you how you managed the household finances. Mm.
All the money went into a purse and it went on top of the fridge. And so, I mean, it's interesting that we have never, in all the years we lived at Blacktown, in the various places we lived, never locked a door or locked a window. I mean, obviously at first it's too isolated out there for anybody to walk out there and steal anything anyway, but it's not, They tend not to steal from their own in those. I've never locked a place at Blacktown. It's quite different now being in the city, having a culture here that's got bars on the windows and doors and that you can't even leave your front door open while you go out the backyard. I mean, I still don't believe that sort of culture happens at Blacktown. It's a different culture. But the money was always just pooled. Whatever came in was just there. Most of it went on food. When you do extra work, that buys the fridge. It then bought a bedroom suite that we had so that we had all the pieces matching. It then buys more timber for another room. So you just upgrade your appliances and the conveniences that you have gradually, I suppose. We didn't have debt, we didn't have any credit, we had a bit of money saved and we knew that was there in case we needed it. But it just, the wages of the Navy were very low, so you just survived on from one week to another, and some weeks were better than others, you know. But the money was never a problem with us. It was just there to be used on whatever we set as priorities. Upgrade the car.
And what sort of car did you buy for your first car?
We had a 1937 Morris as our first car, which we pushed more than we drove, I think. And neither of us had any experience working on cars, so we used to get an instruction manual, and I'd sit on the ground next to the car and Jim would be under it with the screwdrivers or whatever and spanners saying, now turn this to the left three times. And that's how he learnt to work on cars. But we always had Morrises for many years after that.
And what about the industries that grew up in the area? They were mostly poultry farms, weren't they?
Yeah, well, the market gardens out where we were. And there was very little industry out there. It developed a little bit later in. There was a chemical plant there at Doonside later on. But there was very little industry in Blacktown except over on Sunny Hot Road, which is the main industrial area. But it's actually a dormitory suburb. People don't work in Blacktown as much as they live in Blacktown and work somewhere else. So that you're always travelling to and from any sort of work, which is why I eventually had to come back to the city for work, because once you get past a certain level of management, those jobs don't exist in the West anymore, or never did, so that you don't have those same opportunities for the level of employment that you're looking at. But I went to work for Blacktown Council for 10 years as their first community development officer and their first community arts officer and one of the first community arts officers in Australia. And during that 10 years, I got a fellowship to go to England and did an arts administration degree at London University and went through Europe as well on another fellowship with a Ministry from the Arts grant, looking at community arts and living conditions in areas of high density housing and the new towns in England. And I did quite a lot of studies and reports on those for the government here. And then the Australia Council seconded me from Blacktown Council to go around Australia and train all the community arts officers in every state. So, and then I did another tour probably 2 years later on with local government in every state and talking about their community development and budgets. And then I instigated, I didn't instigate, but I was the person who put it into practice, the zero-based budgeting at Blacktown Council, which they did for the first time. So there were a lot of changes and there was a lot of diversity in that 10 years, but it was mainly surveying what existed and looking at what didn't exist and what people wanted to exist. There's enormous groundswell from people out there wanting things to happen, and the facilities were like negligible, but they still are. It hasn't changed a lot. The Art and Craft Group Council set up a whole community centre at the showground, and there, the theatre group was there and the players group were there and the Art and Craft Group, the Literature Group, the Society of Women Writers were there, and the Fellowship of Australian Writers, the Historical Society. All of those people met in buildings that the council built at the showground and still function there. A really dynamic little hive of activity and development. But mainly people were spread out, and that made it very difficult.